mean, Mr. Robinson got involved in baseball in 1945 when I was in the service in a little island called Ulithi in the South Pacific. And there were two major league ball players on that island with me, a fellow by the name of Bicky Vernon, another fellow by the name of Billy Goodman. And they knew I played in the Negro League. So I would, you know, would go out and we would pitch batting practice against each other. And Vernon told me that he thought I had a good opportunity to be involved in major league baseball. So the 47 was a sort of surprise and a great thing for me, thank God, that I had the ability to be involved in baseball. But I didn't know anybody was scouting me at the time. But then I think the early part of 47, there was a fellow by the name of Lou Jones who worked for Bill Veeck, public relations man for Bill Veeck. He came to the house and he said that they were scouting me. And probably come back to see me again in June, and he did come back in June and took me to a ball game. Cleveland was playing the Yankees. And then he went back to Cleveland, and I got a telephone call that he was coming back, and he said he'd be back probably around the early part of July. And we had a doubleheader in Newark, and the first game I played, and the second game I caught a train going to Chicago where the team was. And the next morning I met with Mr. Veeck, signed a contract, and became the first player in the American League.
It's a great moment, and you should be remembered forever for doing it. It was a great time for you. The Cleveland teammates, some were okay about it, some weren't.
Well, I guess that was a natural thing. When you talk about segregation, and some are going to accept, some are not going to accept. But the important thing is that you have to bypass that and concentrate on playing the game of baseball, because if you didn't play the game of baseball well, then you wouldn't be there. So you kind of put that on the back burner, and you knew, because it's not like you're going to something strange. You knew that there was segregation. You knew you wouldn't be accepted. And I think one of the great moments in my life was when Bill Veeck said, "You and I in this together." That certainly made it a little bit more comfortable.
All right, great to have you back with us as we get ready for baseball here from Chase Field in Arizona. That was Larry Doby. And, Raph, thanks so much for going in the archives and pulling out that beautiful, beautiful segment with Larry Doby, who breaks the color line in the American League tomorrow, July 5th, 1947. All right, Paul White joins us, and we love talking ball on the holidays with Paul, of course, a national baseball writer. Paul, how are you?
Doing great, Barty.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here on this July 4th, and we'll get right into it. As we look at this, we're about at the halfway point of the season. So I'm going to ask you your biggest surprise so far this year. Biggest surprise, and let's start with the National League for you.
Wow. I think what surprises me more is some teams that haven't played as well as I thought they were going to. Philadelphia is sort of top of that list for me. I think the Mets are a huge surprise that they've managed to maintain this without DeGrom all year, without Scherzer for a big chunk of the year. They were all in. They were going to be a contender. And you take the two biggest weapons away from them, and they're still leading that division. And it looks like they're going to maintain it through all this, have those guys out there. And, Scherzer pitches tomorrow. DeGrom was throwing over 100 miles an hour in a rehab start over the weekend. Look out, National League, if those guys are back and healthy.
Bill, you there?
Yeah, I am. I didn't know if you were going to ask him. But, Paul, let's go to the American League. I know you jumped on the National League. And one of the surprises that I'm looking at before I get yours is how well the Houston Astros have just pulled away from the West and literally contending with the Yankees this past week. And they played very well. Who was your surprise in the American League?
Wow. I think Cleveland, to a certain extent, that they've been able to hang in this. I think the rest of the teams that are contending in the American League are kind of the group we expected. The American League's more tiered, I guess, than the National League is. The American League, you've got the haves and have-nots. I mean, Houston, obviously a really good team and playing tremendous right now. They beat up on that division that they're in. There's just nobody else. And the Angels kind of gave us a flash early that was kind of smoke and mirrors, and they panicked and fired Madden. There's just nothing else in that division. And I think you mentioned the Astros-Yankees series this week. I think that was huge because the Astros do what a good team's supposed to do. They beat up on the bad teams. Well, this was their sort of marker. Okay, we have the second best record in baseball now. Here's the team that has the best record. We're probably going to see them in October. How do we match up? And even the Yankee people talked this week about the emotion around that series. Yeah, it's become a rivalry with everything that went on in the playoffs before. But beyond that, both teams seemed to sense they needed to make a statement. I think Houston made a bigger statement.
Boy, you look at baseball, Paul White is with us, and two names that jump out at me, Paul. Aaron Judge, and is he going to hit 62? Look, the American League record is 61. Will he hit 62? Will the Yankees win 120? You know, they're getting near the 81 game mark, and they're what, 58, 59 wins?
Right.
And Paul Goldschmidt, at his age, having just a career season, and keeping the Cardinals with Arenado afloat in this thing. How about those guys?
Yeah, I mean, Goldschmidt is probably more crucial to his team than anybody else in baseball right now. And that's really the definition of MVP. And he's clearly the guy in the National League. And again, you know, he's helped keep that team in the race while they're going through a little bit of transition, you know. Everybody likes to make a big deal about, hey, they got Wainwright, and they got Pujols, they got Molina, who's hurt now. But, you know, it's the end for those guys, maybe not Wainwright. But they're weaving in young guys into that team. And that's the one thing the Cardinals do better than anybody else, and that is stay a contender while they rebuild their roster. They do it in small increments. But Goldschmidt and Arenado, to a lesser extent, have been so crucial to that, and that's huge. That's kept them in a race with Milwaukee, which I think is going to be a really good race to the end. But you mentioned Judge. You know, I kind of laugh because I don't know if he'll hit 60. He'll probably hit something close. He'll probably be in the 50s. The odds are the Yankees don't win 120 games, no matter how good you are. That's really, really difficult to do. But if you watch a Yankee telecast, they matter-of-factly refer to Aaron Judge as MVP favorite Aaron Judge over and over and over. And wait a minute, he's having a great year, probably on a par with what Vladdy Guerrero Jr. did in Toronto last year. But excuse me, didn't the guy in Anaheim win the MVP unanimously last year, and he's having a better year this year?
Hey, Paul, a couple pitchers that are thrown for the Dodgers in this rotation are just lighting it up. Gonsolin, 10-1 with a 1.5 earned run average. Anderson, 9-1. As a left-hander who's just been bouncing around, what do you think about these two starters? And they are really holding the Dodgers in a very, very good way in the NL West. And can they keep it up the second half?
That's going to be really interesting because the Dodgers are more vulnerable over the regular season, they've been in the last couple of years. They don't have the depth all over the place, especially in the pitching staff, that they've had over the last couple of years. Gonsolin, to a certain amount, I mean, this has been exceptional, but to a certain amount, that's kind of expected. They saw him as their next guy, as a step or so behind Walker Buehler as they develop young guys in their rotation. So they were hoping that this was the Gonsolin they were going to see over the next couple of years. Yeah, Anderson is amazing in the sense that he's had a tremendous amount of success. They've been able to use him a lot more in terms of depth into games than I think they expected. I think they looked at this guy as one of those five-inning guys, line up the bullpen and hope it works. Well, one of the places the Dodgers are vulnerable this year is in that bullpen, especially from the fifth to the seventh and eighth innings. I mean, even Kimbrel has had his hiccups here, but they don't have the pitching depth as effectively as they've had the last couple of years in pitching sixth, seventh, and even into the eighth innings. They kind of guess, you know, is Graterol going to be good tonight? Can we use David Price in this situation? You know, a lot of other young arms. So that's where I think the Dodgers are trying to figure out where they stand because, yeah, they can win the division with what they have, but they'll be very vulnerable in the postseason with guys that they're not sure of like that.
Boy, very well said. And I will say this, Craig Kimbrel has the worst case of hiccups in the history of baseball. I mean, come on.
But you know, he's
killing him.
You know, but this has been his history. He'll kill you for several weeks, and then he'll go on a streak for a month where he can't be touched. And, you know, I mean, that's no way to go if you're trying to win the World Series. But that's where they are. They decided, okay, Kenley Jansen had started to be that kind of guy. Well, Craig Kimbrell was more of that guy over the last couple of years. They took a huge chance, and we'll see if it works.
No, you're right, and I agree with you. The middle relief is a mystery as well, and they use him all the time. Urias goes, I think, today against Colorado, and they limit him to six innings. So they're in the bullpen a lot. All right, but trade-wise, Dodgers probably could use a pitcher. The Giants need an injection of some speed or something going on here. And I look at players that could be traded. Montas had a pull out of a game yesterday. It was a big deal. But the Reds are the sellers. And to me, they've got two good pitchers that people are going to want in Malley and Castillo.
Yeah, and I think Castillo is probably going to cost you more because of his potential. He's a guy that hasn't quite lived up to what the Reds thought he would. Part of it is on a bad team. But he's the one that I think is going to cost, and the price is going to be high in the pitching market. It's going to be a real, who's going to blink right at the deadline? Because the sellers, like the Reds, and maybe, you know, the A's, you're right, if Montas is okay, a couple other teams, you know, they're going to ask for a ton because there's a lot of competition. There's probably 8-9 teams out there who think they have a chance and are going to want starting pitching. And it's going to be difficult to get. And who's going to, you know, if I'm the Reds, I'm holding out for all your best guys in your system. And, of course, you're saying no, and we're going to go back and forth. But is somebody else, other than, say the Giants are going after Castillo, is somebody else going to blink and give up the prospect that the Reds want? And that's what's going to be interesting to the deadline. The reliever market is going to be a little easier to navigate, and that might end up having more significance. You know, you might see the Dodgers try to get a couple of those guys. A lot of teams will do that because there'll be a lot of good live arms available.
Paul, today's July 4th, and the Giants, the first game against the Arizona Diamondbacks already today. I mean, the season's gone on for so long. 77 games, and the first time you're playing an NL West opponent, the schedule is just so awkward. When I look up and down this starting, you know, lineup today, there's nothing that's really shooting out at me except for Christian Walker that's got 21 home runs. Your thoughts on this Diamondback lineup they're throwing out daily?
Yeah, they're hoping for some young guys to come through, and you know they were disappointed. Pavin Smith, they thought was going to be a guy who took a step forward. They've sent him back to the minors. Marte's a decent player at second base. He's had his physical issues. Josh Rojas, who was a super utility guy for them, to settle in at third base. I mean, they have a lot of complementary players on that roster. And the younger guys they're hoping for, they just going to have to be patient. Alec Thomas in the outfield could be a pretty good player. We'll see. But, yeah, you're right. There's not a guy there. And, their record shows that's what kind of club they have.
Well, we asked this to Bruce Jenkins up, and we Mike Farron as well. I'll put you on the spot. It's September the 1st. Give me your six playoff teams in the National League.
Oh, let's see. The Dodgers for certain. I think St. Louis can hold off the Brewers, but that's going to be a really tight race and depends on the Brewers' pitching. I'll go with the Mets now. I was getting a little skeptical, but it looks like the pitching is going to fall back into place. And Showalter, I think, is manager of the year for how he's changed the way that team approaches the game. I'll put the Braves in as the fourth team, and I'm going to go with the Phillies and the Padres as the other two, but it's going to be tight.
Boy, trades will be a big deal. Paul, it's a pleasure having you on, as always, and it's a holiday, and we'll be talking to you around the trade deadline, as we always do, to see what happens. But the interesting thing is, and Bill and I will chat about it later, if you're a playoff team in that 6-5 spot, do you really go out and make a big trade? You've got to have three games on the road. And maybe, maybe if you're a in that playoff, but you're down the pecking order, so to speak. Maybe you just don't go out and do a lot. And that's my final thought to you, Paul.
Yeah, I think real quickly that, one, if you're in that position, maybe you go for some middle relief that, you know, that's cheap. Or if you're going to trade for a bigger guy, it's got to be a guy that you can control for at least another year.
Yeah, well said. All right, have a great fourth, and always a pleasure. We'll catch up with you again.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, take care, guys.
Yeah, thank you. All right, more coming up. Bill, one of your favorites, Ernie Harwell, has got this. Every July 4th, we play Ernie Harwell's Ode to Baseball. O-D-E is Ode to Baseball. And it was done in the 50s, and Ernie wrote it in a beautiful voice, and we always play it on July the 4th. So we'll go out before our next segment, Bill Carey and I'll talk, with our Ode to Baseball by Ernie Harwell.
Well, thank you, Marty. I wrote this back in 1955, and the names of the villains and the heroes have changed since then, and a lot of other things have changed. But I really feel that the spirit of the game between the lines is pretty much the same as it was even back that far. And here's my definition of baseball. A baseball is a president tossing out the first ball of the season, and a pudgy schoolboy playing catch with his dad on the Mississippi farm. A tall, thin old man waving a scorecard from the corner of his dugout, that's baseball. And so is a big, fat guy with a bulbous nose running home one of his 714 home runs. There's a man in Mobile who remembers that Honus Wagner hit a triple in Pittsburgh 46 years ago. That's baseball. And so is a scout reporting that a 16-year-old Sandlot pitcher in Cheyenne is a coming Walter Johnson. Baseball is a spirited race of man against man, reflex against reflex, a game of inches. Every skill is measured. Every heroic, every failing is seen and cheered or booed, and then becomes a statistic. In baseball, democracy shines its clearest. The only race that matters is the race of the bag. The creed is the rule book, and color merely something to distinguish one team's uniform from another. Baseball is a rookie, his experience no bigger than the lump in his throat as he begins fulfillment of his dream. And it's a veteran, too, a tired old man, of 35, hoping that those aching muscles can pull him through another sweltering August and September. Nicknames are baseball, names like Zeke and Pie and Kai Kai and Home Run and Cracker and Dizzy and Dazzy. Baseball is the clear, cool eyes of Rogers Hornsby, the flashing spikes of a Ty Cobb and an overage pixie named Rabbit Moranville. Baseball, just a game as simple as a ball and bat, and yet as complex as the American spirit it symbolizes. It's a sport, business, and sometimes almost even religion. Why, the fairy tale of Willie Mays making a brilliant World Series catch and then dashing off to play stickball in the streets with his teenage pals, that's baseball. And so is the husky voice of a doomed Lou Gehrig saying, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. Baseball is cigar smoke, hot roasted peanuts, sporting news, ladies' day, down in front. Take me out to the ball game, the seventh inning stretch, and the star-spangled banner. Baseball is a man named Campanella telling the nation's business leaders, you have to be a man to be a big leaguer, but you have to have a lot of little boy in you, too. This is a game for America, this baseball, a game for boys and for men.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's one of the nicest things I've ever heard. How did it all come about?
It came about, Marty, because I was going out when I was in Baltimore one winter. I was going out to make a speech and began to think about baseball and what it had meant to me over the years. And I had an envelope. I just had a pencil and started writing down some stuff. And it sort of evolved from that.